Swiftly, a line of intent seemed to impact the floating jelly, and it followed my commands smoothly, like the bashers above us. Able to ignore the movement and positioning of the mob, I quickly began funneling tainted essence into its being. My new ranking showed its worth yet again, allowing me to funnel enough essence into the mob for it to reach D-Rank 9. Significantly stronger than the last time I had controlled an assimilator, I felt confident that this would be a spectacular event. The party rounded the corner, ignoring the swirling essence in their haste or arrogance. They walked down the narrow hallway, blinded by the essence in the air, but not realizing how beneficial a simple light would have been. The entire group was sweaty, dirty, and covered in gore of some kind. The 10 remaining people were arguing furiously about the next bend they should take, and whether or not to try turning around and retracing their steps. I found their conversation annoying. They had already tried going back and found only a dead end. Now it was time to form another dead end. Shameless pun. The only question now was what kinds of essence to use. I wanted to try another combination, but had no idea what would happen. Selecting earth and wind, two types that were opposites, struck me as a good idea. Either they would cancel each other out, or something fun might happen. I began building the essence in the runes attached to the hanging stingers, allowing it to reach almost critical mass before interlacing them and adding just a touch more essence. The results shocked me, but not nearly as much as it shocked them. Zap! A huge bolt of plasma, commonly referred to as lightning, shattered the air, flying uncontrollably toward the first metal object in its path. The sword that it first touched was instantly white-hot, glowing, and slightly melted. The man holding it was dead before he even began to fall, but the lightning was still traveling. It flew into a heavily armored man, the personal guard of the little noble. I expected the lightning to bounce again, but it instead arced back and forth between his armor, fusing it into a solid mass of metal whilst cooking the man inside. The rest of the party stood in shock.
Get it? I am hilarious.
For a long moment, which I used to examine my assimilator. I had brought him up to D-Rank 9, but after that bolt of energy, he had been reduced to D-Rank 3. Yikes. That was a huge amount of power for an underwhelming effect. I could do that one more time before the assimilator began running too low to sustain flight, or I could use other, more effective abilities. I started funneling more essence into the mob, hoping to re-empower him before the humans attacked. I had just begun when they launched their counterattack. As a unit, they rushed forward, grouping tightly together so they could protect the person next to them. Too easy. I just couldn't pass up this chance. I funneled infernal and fire essences down the stingers, layering them on top of each other and releasing it just before the humans reached my mob. A blast of air as cold as the void snapped outward, the water in the air crystallizing and falling as shattered ice. The three people closest to my mob died very quickly as the blood in their brains froze, sending shards of ice deep into the gray matter. The people not caught directly in the blast began exhibiting signs of hypothermia, but were able to reach the floating mob before I could release more essence. Blunt weapons impacted my assimilator, but if they did any damage, it didn't show. Not having a brain to rattle was a definite boon in this case. Just as I was getting cocky, a sword lashed out and left a gaping wound. The noble zipped forward, his hand entering and exiting the wound with blinding speed. He was clutching something, and my mob dropped to the ground with a wet splat.
It had a beast core.
The noble showed the glimmering gem to the few surviving members.
We were not told that there were cored beasts in here. When we get out, heads will roll.
He was shaking in fury, clutching the core hard enough that I was surprised it didn't shatter.
Danny, look! They are down to a regular-sized party, finally. 5 people, better rewards. Not great rewards. These guys are all C-ranked. But, you know, better.
I was watching the noble throw a tantrum, kicking his charred, dead guard and ordering him to return to work. The others exchanged cautious looks when the noble was not looking their way. An unhinged, powerful person was not who they wanted to be near.
Fine, you lazy.
The noble let out a tiny shriek of frustration.
Let's finish this stupid dungeon.
Rude. I am quite intelligent, I think, I muttered, making Danny laugh at me quietly.
A bit biased, though, aren't you?
Danny whispered to me as the humans made it into the final boss room.
Great! Even less visibility!
The furious noble looked around the steam-filled room, sweating as the heat and humidity began to take its toll. A low growl began to reverberate around the room, the tones rising and falling. The primal portion of the humans' brains took hold. They scooted together, goosebumps raising on their skin while fear flashed across their faces. Their eyes were darting around, trying to pierce the wall of steam around them.
No, I'm done with this.
The noble raised his hands, chanting a few words as he moved essence through the air. He pulled his hands, and the water in the air condensed into droplets. A hot rain fell to the ground with a loud pattering, revealing a now furious wet cat. One of the men shook slightly.
That is a big cat.
The noble looked at the speaker coldly.
Kill it!
The group raced across the sodden ground, weapons at the ready. Snowball took a deep breath, exhaling a fast-moving cloud of superheated steam as a tremendous roar. Able to see clearly for the first time since entering the third floor, the humans easily dodged the attack. Snowball moved in a whirl of motion, claws flashing out and trailing light-distorting waves of heat. A shield caught the blow, throwing the person holding it back and onto the floor. The shield had five glowing points on it where the claws had touched. A staff came at Snowball, scoring a direct hit. Most of the damage was mitigated by the thick layers of fur covering his body, but he still yelped like a struck dog and flinched.
Poor Snowball,
Danny whimpered, watching the cat intently. The cat counterattacked, landing a blow on the offending staff. The metal-shod quarterstaff superheated where the claws touched, making the iron banding glow cherry red and igniting the wood. The staff was thrown away, but the focus was on the great sword the noble was swinging haphazardly with a wild shout. Snowball ducked under the horizontal slash, losing a few tufts of fur to the razor-sharp blade. He reared up, headbutting the wild man and tossing him away like a rag doll. Another man stabbed from behind, driving a dagger deep into the muscle on the cat's left side back, eliciting a yowl. Snowball whirled around, landing a solid blow to his attacker and dragging him to the floor. He latched onto the arm the man threw up to protect his neck, savaging the armor-clad limb. Another stab from behind made the cat run forward, each of his paws landing on the prone man as he did so. The multi-hundred-pound cat, along with the force of his bounding, snapped many bones. Snowball raced to a covered steam vent, arriving there just before his pursuers. He lashed out, and a blast of steam erupted into the room. The men behind him started screaming as the boiling air washed over them, cooking them in their armor like a lobster in a pot. They got out of the steam, blisters formed across almost every inch of skin. They stumbled around blindly, their eyes, from the sclera to the retina, solidified like hard-boiled eggs. Snowball struck out, slicing the neck of one of them. There was only a small amount of blood, the wound otherwise cauterized near instantly. Snowball tried for the second blind man, only to have a great sword swing down, parting his head from his body in one clean swing. The noble shimmered into view. He had apparently been using a high-level ability, using a thin layer of reflective water to shield himself from Snowball's sight.
Gotcha, you brute! Skin this cat and crack its skull open. I am nearly positive that this is also a cored beast, so find me the core it is hiding.
Skin it, my lord? How do you want us to do that?
What do you mean? Take its fur. I want this as a cloak. Do it the way you normally would.
The man looked confused. He was concussed quite badly.
But, my lord, there is more than one way to skin a cat.
The noble sighed.
Just lengthwise. Is that understandable in your limited mind?
He walked over to the blinded man and used his essence to form a thin layer of water over the destroyed eyes and exposed skin, keeping his body lubricated until they could get to a cleric. They quickly moved toward the exit, stopping as they noticed a golden glowing chest.
"Likely not worth it,"
the noble tried to continue onward. Licking his lips, one of the men dared to go against the statement, throwing open the chest. Inside was a dagger, a sword, and a massive tower shield. I made that happen by extending the chest deep into the ground, only actually showing a portion of its size above ground. Each was well made, but had subtle flaws that would force them to break like a standard piece of equipment. I had promised Danny that I wouldn't give out unbreakable runed items anymore, after all. Not recognizing that the items were runed, the noble scoffed and started guiding his blind subordinate up the stairs. The other two men grabbed the items and followed closely behind.
"What do you think, Danny? Do we need to worry about mobs for a while, or just focus on expanding?"
Danny laughed as a young version of Snowball appeared in the room and began growing quickly.
"I think we are all set on mobs for now, Cal. Let's hollow out the entire mountain range."
15.
"Gale!"
A server who worked at the pleasure house was running up to Dale.
"Madame Chandra sent me to let you know that the High Royals have arrived and are waiting to talk to you."
"Thanks. This is pretty good timing, actually. Would you let her know I will be there as soon as I bathe?"
Dale asked the waiting server.
"Absolutely, my lord."
He didn't leave, seeming to be expecting something. Dale raised a brow at him.
"Yes?"
The man coughed lightly.
"Well, this is really outside my normal duties."
"Yes, thank you." Dale started to turn away, but Rose caught his arm.
"Dale," she whispered, "he wants a tip. Money."
"What? Why?"
Dale returned in a normal tone, making her wince.
"Because he came here at a run, when he could have dawdled and taken his time, making sure that you had no time to clean up or refresh yourself. The term TIPS is an acronym for to ensure proper service. If you aren't a generous person, the people who can make your life easier will find ways to make it much harder instead."
Rose explained in a hurried hiss.
"I see. Got it. I just never heard of that before."
Dale turned back to the waiting man.
"Sorry for the wait here. Please, take this as a token of my appreciation."
He flipped him a silver coin, making the server's eyes go wide. The man caught it with a grin, running off the way he came. Rose rolled her eyes.
"Way to overpay, Dale," she sighed. "Ah, well, at least you know he will always rush to you. You may have forgotten, but a silver is still about a week's worth of pay for people who don't risk their lives every day. 100 copper. You remember, the little coins that you used to dive after in the dungeon?"
Dale rolled his eyes and broke off from the group, making his way over to the designated bathing area. He stripped down, quickly scrubbing himself and getting as clean as possible in the frigid water. Feeling much more awake, and slightly shivering, he made his way to the restaurant. Along the way, he called for a small group of guards to shadow him, making sure there were no nobles lurking nearby looking for revenge. He walked to the doors of the restaurant, being stopped by guards with wicked-looking blades.
"Halt, good sir. This building is closed for a private event. I apologize, but I must ask you to take your luncheon elsewhere."
Dale paused, surprised by the politeness shown to him. So far, all of the nobles he had encountered, and their guards, had been exceedingly rude and pompous.
"Thank you, but I was actually summoned to this event. My name is Dale. I am the owner of this land."
"Ah, excellent."
The guard smiled at him.
"Well, come on in, then. Be warned, though, that the guards in there are rather jumpy, so please don't make any threats or threatening motions. People have been accidentally skewered for sneezing too abruptly."
Dale watched him to see if he was making a joke, but the guard certainly seemed serious.
"Duly noted. Thanks for the warning."
He stepped inside, walking into the main dining room. There were only 2 people at a table with a smattering of guards around the room in various poses as they watched different angles. Normally, this room was bustling. People usually were here the moment the restaurant opened. The man sitting at the table looked up.
"Pardon me. May I ask why you are here?"
To Dale's surprise,
Though the man's body looked to be in his early 20s, his face was haggard and drawn. There were lines on his face and circles under his eyes that only came from extreme stress and lack of sleep, and the woman next to him had a similar visage.
"Pardon my intrusion," Dale tried to match the formality, and suddenly realized that he had no idea what to call them.
While he had amazing insight into the dark court of the elves, he had little to no idea how much would translate to human politics.
Your Highness?
The man sighed.
"Please, I am really trying not to be discourteous, but if you are here to stare like the others were, I would really like you to leave. I want a nap so badly that..."
Dale rallied, slipping into his most politically professional mindset.
"No, I am here to introduce myself and discuss matters that require our combined attention. My hesitation was due to not knowing the proper title to address you. My name is Dale, Duke of the Huin Nation, Baron of the Lion and Phoenix Realms. I am the owner of this land."
The man at the table blinked, a fast motion that turned slow, as though he were fighting to keep his eyes open. He opened his mouth to reply, but was saved from answering by the other table occupant smoothly taking the reins of conversation.
"Hello and welcome. Please be seated. I am Crown Princess Marie of the Phoenix Kingdom. This is Crown Prince Henry of the Lion Kingdom."
She continued, introductions complete.
"Thank you for taking the time to offer your respects as soon as you were able, and please join us so that we may discuss the issues you bring. Also, please be aware that neither of us have slept since the rumors of war have begun, so our meeting must be a short one as we still need to find an area to sleep."
Dale sat down.
"I can take care of that. I have quarters in the temple right now, and there is plenty of space available. A stone building, easily defensible."
He nodded at the nearby guards as he mentioned this. They obviously appreciated the gesture,
"which is well-appointed and spacious. I hope it will serve until we are able to find sleeping arrangements more befitting you."
Prince Henry waved away his concerns.
"That will be wondrous. I have slept on nothing for long enough that anywhere is enough for me. I'd take a stable, or the dungeon."
"Agreed,"
Marie intoned tiredly.
"Thank you."
"Please, think nothing of it."
Dale looked between these two. They were nothing like the other nobles he had met thus far. He wondered if their politeness was simply the difference between main and branch families.
"The first thing I need to bring to your attention is that I currently have the Baron's Adams, one from each of your kingdoms, under lock and key."
That woke them up, sharpening their gaze as they worked to keep their emotions in check. Marie spoke first.
"May I ask, why are they under arrest?"
"Currently just being held, pending your judgment, of course. Their first actions upon entering this area were to accost anyone nearby that happened to look their way. They had someone, at least one person, whipped for not knowing how to address them properly. My guards are still looking for him, as they told me he was being held for some reason."
Dale looked at the stony faces of the royals.
"And," Henry explosively sighed, "until we come into our own inheritance, we cannot change the laws of the kingdom. They have the right to act like the entitled snobs that they are. So their people will eventually revolt and potentially overthrow them. There is less a chance of that happening if these selfsame snobs reach the B rankings, I suppose. Dale, every noble is master of his own land until they break crown law. They also set their guards on me and threatened me with execution, if that means anything to you," Dale offered, aghast at the casual acceptance of random beatings.
Henry caught his breath and looked at Marie. She shrugged.
"Well," Henry was glancing around, "what do you want to happen to them? Executing them, or even beating them, would start a war with the Baronese that we could ill afford right now."
Dale shook his head.
"Nothing so drastic. I want permission to create my own charter, a set of laws that visiting nobility will need to follow, else I can punish them. I intend to build this area into a city, and I don't want people to think they can show up and attack my people. I would also like you to order them to follow my laws, on my land at least."
Marie chuckled ruefully.
"Your people, huh? Well, Henry, we have been wanting to change the way peasants are treated, and he is offering this to us on a silver platter. If his area prospers, we can use him as precedence for change.
Henry nodded. I'm with you. Sounds interesting, Dale. Since you already have an honorary title, I can make it a real title and bind your authority to this land. Unless superseded by my father's direct orders, I name you Baron Dale Phantom of the Barony Phantom.
As do I, Crown Princess Marie, name you Baron Dale Phantom of the Barony Phantom.
Marie laughed and looked at Henry, who was squinting at her.
It is contested land, after all.
She turned her attention back to Dale.
I would like to see the charter you propose and offer my services to help fill potential, gaps in your laws that others may attempt to take advantage of.
I offer my services as well, Henry promised earnestly.
Me too.
Princess Brianna faded into view, sitting at the table. The guards did not appreciate this.
Treachery!
Assassins! Defend the—
Brianna yelled over them as the guards began to move.
Oh, calm down already.
The guards stopped moving, cold sweat trickling down their brow as knives glittered against their throats.
Everyone, stand down.
Dark elves stepped away from the guards and vanished from sight.
Sorry, they were here to ensure there were no misunderstandings as we met.
Henry replied surprisingly mildly, though his face was ashen.
As you did not assassinate us, I am rather pleased to meet you. It is not every day that a royal meets a moon elf and the princess at that, if I am guessing correctly. More rare to survive the encounter. He finished with a question in his voice.
The guards were not as pleased as the prince pretended to be, closing ranks around the human royals and glaring at the lounging elf, who grinned and twiddled her fingers at them, trying to rile them up. From their prune-colored faces, she was succeeding. Her demeanor shifting, she sat up and became serious.
I am very glad that you have granted Dale the powers of a landed baron. He is a good man. You, though.
She eyed the royals carefully.
From what I hear about you, you are working to downplay the power of nobles, taking away their near-omnipotent power in their own lands. I hear that you are planning to give peasants similar rights to the noble classes and plan to educate them on our cultivation techniques and abilities so they can live longer, as well as do more than live their lives simply and peacefully. Is this true?
Henry looked pained, so Marie again took the lead and nodded.
Yes,
she said simply.
Excellent. You are taking the same step that elves took long ago.
Brianna's lips twisted into a genuine smile.
There are risks and side effects to this plan of action. Once a critical mass of the population cultivates heavily, reproduction rates slow. When they realize this, they will cultivate more, trying to solve the issue. Eventually, your people will not be able to survive long without a constant influx of essence, but they will be stronger, smarter, and healthier than ever before.
The known and well-explained consequences of their plans seemed to take the royals by surprise, but they also seemed heartened by the cheerful outlook Brianna had painted for them.
I will have my people draw up a charter with Dale's direction and present it to you in a few weeks for you to ratify or amend. Is this reasonable to all?
A few glances between the humans and a nod.
Lovely. Now, if you ordered the barons to apologize and make amends, they must do so, yes?
That is so, Henry affirmed. We can also order them to seek no revenge, in any form. When we are done with them, they will only be able to sing your praises, no matter how it pains them.
Marie laughed tiredly.
I've been looking for a reason to put Adams on a short leash ever since he had a maid executed for refusing his bed.
Dale looked at her oddly.
Wait.
People can refuse orders? The way they looked at me when I told them no made me think that orders were unconditional.
Only legal orders. Submitting to arrest or bowing when you have broken a law, even if it is a stupid law, is different. Rape is illegal no matter what kingdom you reside in, and trying to use your position to force another into bed can be nothing else.
Henry had to take a deep breath to calm his emotions.
The others looking at him forced him to explain.
I hate seeing my people abused. It is my duty to protect and provide for them, and every failure to do so is another stain on my soul.
Dale nodded happily. He liked these people.
I feel that you would enjoy the company of my teammate, Tom. You have a similar manner of speech. I would be pleased to meet him. The only Tom I know that speaks like me is a northern barbarian, a giant red-haired prince.
Henry chuckled at his memories.
Dale, while we are in town, I'll make sure to keep the other nobles on a short leash. You likely won't even see them for a week or so.
Dale looked at Henry in horror. He had gotten caught on one part of the conversation.
Tom is a prince? Oh, no. And I have him training with Hans. I need to leave. Please, make your way to the temple. I will arrange accommodations on my way.
Cal.
Ah, nighttime. When the majority of miners are gone for the day and people aren't picking medicinal herbs while dodging angry rabbits. I sighed happily as I began refreshing the dungeon, removing scarring on the walls and floors from traps, missed attacks, and successful attacks. I glanced over at Snowball, who was doing very non-cat-like things. Having fun, Danny? The Danny-possessed cat stilled and looked at me.
Very much so. How are things going up above? Is that half-dwarf still at it?
I looked. Sure enough, the half-dwarf was merrily swinging his pick, blasting holes in the rock face.
If he continued for another few minutes, he would be outside of the dungeon and into the mountain proper.
Yup. On the plus side, he is helping me expand horizontally. Too bad for him. Whatever he finds is likely going to be subpar. I can't really be expected to give him treasure outside of myself.
The intrepid miner swung again, the force of his blow creating an opening outside of my influence, and therefore my sight. He gasped, eyes going wide. He fell to his knees, and tears sprang to his eyes. He reached forward with one hand, dropping his pick. Apparently there was a buildup of some sort of gas.
Yep. Now that it is in my influence, I know it to be methane.
The pick hit the ground and threw sparks, creating a minor explosion.
Really, it was just enough to throw the miner to the ground and shatter a few rocks. He stood back up and stepped into the open area, outside of my vision.
I watched for him for several moments, hearing his murmurs of glee and the pounding of his pick. He left within a half hour or so, gleefully chuckling the whole time. I extended tendrils of influence into the area, widening my range as soon as was possible. I looked for anything that could have made him behave so out of character, but I found nothing. He must have done a very good job collecting whatever it was.
Danny, what do you think was in there?
I was still frantically searching.
No clue, sorry. I am going to keep training. Snowball is a little harder to control than the other cats.
Fair enough.
After we'd found out that Danny was good at fighting, she had been training constantly to get better. I didn't really have the knack for it. I was more of the idea man. I made things that could fight so I didn't need to. I turned my attention to filling in the tunnel, where the half-dwarf had been mining, with fairly porous stone that didn't shatter as easily as normal, which would reduce the efficiency of the blasting pick, making it far less effective. While I was absorbing the rubble, a glint of metal caught my attention, and I looked at it closely.
Aluminum?
Was that what had excited him so much?
There was so much aluminum in the stones and dirt that I'd never bothered to give it out.
Surely it was exceedingly common, right? I pondered on this all night, whilst repairing and upgrading certain portions of the deeper levels. When daylight started trickling down from above, and I felt the stirrings of restless feet at the entrance, I turned my attention to the first group to step in. Dale and his people, of course.
Well, good morning there, sunshine. I hope you slept well and are ready for a fun-filled day of excitement and adventure,
I sent toward Dale. He flinched, looking around for new or sudden traps.
Can't you just leave me alone? I've been doing what you ask. Can I at least not get bothered by your incessant nattering?
Fine mood you are in today.
I think that you were getting a bit too much of an ego, been bossing people around recently.
Danny had been spying for me recently, as well as mutterings from the other dungeon divers mentioning Dale.
What are you, anyway? People seem to have a bad opinion of you.
Dale looked a bit hurt at these words. I think I may have struck a nerve.
If you must know, I own the mountain. I was a sheep herder when I found this place and was given enough money to purchase the land for a pittance. Now people are magically forced to listen to me when I tell them to leave.
Interesting. You own the mountain, and I own you. Funny how the world works,
I teased him.
You do not own me. I am a free man, and I will not...
Whatever he would not do was interrupted as I shut down the nerves running to his legs, and he bonelessly toppled to the floor.
Nice! I hadn't been sure I could do that.
Returning control of Dale's legs, I waited for him to make an excuse to the others before continuing to talk.
Since I enclosed your center in a soul gem and essentially saved your life again, I have a bit of power over you. Also, since you opened yourself to me fully the other day...
Oh, right. I heard Dale mutter under his breath.
My connection to Dale slammed closed, only a tiny tendril of power remaining between us. If I had eyes, I would have blinked in surprise.
Well...
I can still hear you. Damn,
Dale thought with deep overtones of exasperation.
Can't really get around that. We are connected. Well, fine. Be that way. How did you do that?
Danny was now listening in on our conversation through me. This was more exciting than making a cat low crawl across a room with only its front paws, apparently.
Why should I tell you? What do I get out of it?
Greedy little human. How about a trade? I'll ask you a question, and you can ask me something,
I offered generously.
No thanks.
What the? You don't have questions?
I was mind-boggled at the lack of curiosity.
I have many, but I feel that giving you any information would be a bad deal for me.
Dale went back to trying to ignore me.
That wouldn't do at all. How about we chat when you aren't busy, and I won't send every creature in here to overwhelm you,
I threatened. I think he could hear my bluff. Mind speak can be annoying like that.
Oh, you are finally going to give up your pretense at being neutral? I bet Hans would survive, and the first time I felt you weren't playing fair, I would tell him. Then they would find a way to come and kill you permanently. My understanding is that dungeons who do stuff like that are destroyed quickly.
Dale rebutted, making me almost growl in frustration. I could tell that he wasn't bluffing.
Dale, look out!
Tom cried, making Dale spin around with his weapon at the ready. His team looked at him in confusion, and he blushed, murmuring something about hearing a noise.
Did you just fake Tom's voice in my mind? Dale thought at me.
Maybe.
I laughed at the swear words he thought at me.
What an angry person you are. Tell you what, I'll let you go first. Ask a question. I'll choose to answer it or not. If I choose not to, I'll put better items in the next chest you are sure to find. Either way, I then ask you something.
I waited for a response, but none seemed forthcoming.
If you don't answer because you don't know, fine. I wasted a turn. If you don't answer because you don't want to, you will get worse loot. If you do answer, you get another turn, and so forth. You must answer as fully as you can.
I thought that was a fair deal, and Danny confirmed it for me when I glanced at her.
This is an agreeable compromise for now, I suppose. That is, as long as you swear to do nothing to distract me or create unfair situations for me or my team,
Dale said thoughtfully.
This deal continues permanently, I assume.
Yes, it does. My turn,
I chuckled, feeling good about that trick.
Nope. If you think about that, I asked no question. You just supplied me with information.
Oh dear, it seems someone has been teaching Dale how to be crafty. Now I was worried.
My first question is this. Do you actually have no control over me right now, or are you playing with my head to get answers?
I really have no direct control. All I can do is try to influence you with my words and needs. My turn. Why do I have no control? You did something. What?
Something that dark elves in political positions are taught early on in their career is that people can be controlled or influenced by others that are trained to do so. I tightened my aura, leaving less room for outside influences to penetrate.
Dale didn't make it sound easy, but I was still a bit worried about this. Is that the real reason I shouldn't create reasoning mobs in here? Because if they worked out this method, I would lose control of them totally? Something to think about.
I've heard you talking to someone else. Who is it?
Was Dale's next question. I looked at Danny, who gave me a look that clearly suggested I answer in the negative.
Can't tell you, sorry. You earn a boost to your next treasure chest.
I ignored his muttered frustration.
There is a half-dwarf that comes in here and mines. He left with something that made him happy enough to bring him to tears, but I don't know what it was. What was it?
Dale seemed surprised, but covered it well by punching an exceptionally fluffy bunny in the face as he contemplated his answer.
Evan? I heard from him this morning. You really don't know? He had found some rare metal. He called it aluminum. It is worth more than platinum, per weight, and holds essence so well that the metal itself becomes stronger. When enchanted, it becomes something that he calls mithril. My turn. How did you not know what he had taken?
He was outside of the dungeon at that point. He tunneled in a straight line for so long that he was outside of my range. That area is now inside my influence, I murmured while I thought over the implications of his last comment.
Okay. Why is aluminum so rare? It is stupidly abundant. It is seriously everywhere. You have some on your boot right now.
Dale paused, considering. I guess I don't know. My guess is that it accumulates in mineral deposits rarely, and there is no known method to extract it from everything else. If it is all around like you say, that is the only logical explanation that I can think of. I grunted. He had answered as best he could, so I had nothing to call him out on.
Dang rules. Why do I always set rules for myself?
I'm going to save my question for now. We are coming up on a boss room, and being distracted while fighting Rael is a bad idea. I hope you remember our non-interference agreement.
He carefully phrased his words so that they weren't a question. Dale was getting clever.
Dale. The dungeon was getting to him. He had been distracted the entire time they were here, and the others were starting to catch on that he was not paying attention. A basher had gotten past him and landed a damaging blow on Adam's leg when Dale was supposed to be watching out for him. Even now, it was darkening into a deep bruise. Hans was looking at him closely.
"You back with us now?" he asked directly, in the tactless way Hans was known for. "It looks like you've been arguing with yourself for the last hour, and if you aren't done, we should probably just wait. You know, instead of fighting a bear-sized armored rabbit that tends to squish people."
Dale flushed. He hadn't realized he was being so obvious. "Yeah, sorry, Hans. Sorry, Adam. I've been thinking about other things. I know we are suffering for it. I am now fully focused. Let's go kick this pig." Tom cleared his throat.
"Art thou feeling proper? We go now to kill an overgrown rabbit, not a pig. If hallucinations or a fever are afflicting your person, we should seek a healer."
"He is fine, Tom," Adam interjected. "That was a saying, and it means that he is ready and willing to go."
"Ah, that does make more sense now."
They stepped into the room, and Rael wasted no time in making his attack. Sometimes he came from a hole hidden high in the wall, and sometimes he tried to hide, blending in with the wall. Today Rael just seemed ready to kill, and was dashing at them even as they stepped into his territory. Rael ran at an angle to the wall, then jumped and pushed off it to maintain momentum whilst changing direction. Mid-air, he flipped just before landing, increasing his momentum and creating a much larger area of damage than Dale had previously seen. Stone shards went flying from the ground, chipped off and sent at high speeds from the impact site.
Small slivers pinged off weapons, while others opened small cuts wherever they touched. Tom roared and stepped forward, swinging his warhammer at Rail with deadly intent. This had worked the previous day, easily slaying the boss. But today Rail leaned back on his haunches and swung his paws like a boxer. The huge warhammer caught the blow just behind the head of the weapon, sending it flying across the room.
"Yes!"
Dale heard in his head. Expecting that the warhammer was gone, the rest of the group rushed to land their own attacks. The large basher ducked and weaved, avoiding some blows and catching others on its armor. It threw a 1-2 punch that tossed Tom across the room, dealing damage, but not nearly as much as a charge would have. Rabbits are not built to be boxers. They are built to use their hind legs to supply power. The way it was acting right now was entirely out of the norm, making Dale wonder if Rail had gotten stronger or possibly higher ranked. Rose landed a few arrows into the flesh around Rail's neck, prompting a glitter flit to zip across the room and boop him with a powerful influx of healing essence. Hans executed the glitter flit with a cartwheel in midair, turning into a surprisingly effective whirling succession of blades. Rail bounced, jumping straight up and coming down heavily, making the standing members of the group flinch, almost losing their footing. His armor fell off him as his ability, Avenger, activated. His head suddenly had a crown of jagged granite, and Rail was furious. While the humans were off balance, he dropped to all fours and rushed Rose as she stood in front of his real target, Hans. She easily dodged out of the way, and Tom was suddenly in front of Rail, swinging his warhammer in a fury. Rail dropped, head mangled beyond repair, and the others sat down to catch their breath.
"What was that?" Hans questioned the others. They shrugged, so he shook his head and skinned the glitter flit.
"I heard he had an ability, but I've never seen him fight like that before."
Rose considered the slowly melting form of Rail. Adam looked at Tom, who was shaking, trying to come down from his fury.
"You okay over there, buddy?"
I have too much of the rage of my ancestors. If I had, it would be easier if I had more to kill," Tom ground out through gritted teeth. His hands were white where he held his hammer in a too tight grip. Hans looked at the deeply breathing man and nodded.
"That clears that up, at least."
"What?" Dale looked between the two, and Tom seemed suddenly ashamed.
There is something I must explain," Tom began. "I was born the Crown Prince of the Wolf Kingdom, but when it was found that the taste of blood sends me into a rage, I was disowned. The blood rage is an outdated remnant of a time in our history where those of us with the fire-infused blood were the only real defense against the ice giants. Now, though, who would trust a man that can barely control his bloodthirst to be a leader of men? I was disinherited by my father, refused the cultivation techniques that were my birthright, and sent out to find my own way in life. Now, here I am."
"Is this why you took that extra swing at Rail that killed a member of your former team?"
Hans's tone was laced with barely controlled anger.
"It is," Tom admitted shamefacedly. "I had taken a blow that tore my lip, and the fury raced through me. I could find nothing else to attack besides my friends, so I released my anger on Rail's corpse."
Hans barely waited for him to finish speaking before beginning to yell.
"So you are telling us that a small injury to you may cost us our lives, and you never thought to warn us?"
"Hans, maybe you should," Dale tried to interject.
"No!"
Hans shouted him down before turning back to Tom coldly.
"I thought I was your mentor, a person that you trusted to teach you everything you needed to know. Why would you not tell me about something this important? If you can't control your body's reaction to fire essence, we need to fix that. It isn't hard to do."
"I am sorry."
Tom was staring at the ground.
"It is not so much a secret as a shameful... Wait, what?"
His head snapped up, eyes bulging with confusion and a touch of hope.
"I mean, it is a slow process, but it is just tedious, not difficult."
Hans looked at the odd expression on Tom's face.
"What?"
Tom swallowed, clenching his jaw as he tried to formulate a question.
"There is a cure to the blood fire?"
Hans nodded. "Yup. It is such a rare condition that I suppose that it isn't widely known, but it is easy to learn."
"Hans, if you are jesting, I will be hurt beyond measure,"
Tom pleadingly informed his teacher. "I am quite serious."
"I can't believe it."
Tom looked at the ceiling, his height and the angle hiding that his eyes were misty.
"I could go home."
16. I watched Dale's team leaving the dungeon after cultivating for roughly half an hour.
"Dale? Can you hear me?"
There was no reply, and no feelings of frustration from his end, so I knew that he was out of range. He was a big, seething ball of brain chemicals churning with barely controlled emotions under that tough front he put forward. I turned my attention to Danny, who was practicing her fine control of the big cats down here.
"Question for you, if you have a moment."
I waited for her full attention.
"I had a chance to absorb that warhammer I gave away, but when I tried, nothing happened. Thoughts?"
She separated from Snowball, who sank down to the ground, exhausted.
That is odd. You had it far enough away from him?"
"Yes, he had to run across the room to retrieve it. I had plenty of time to work on disintegrating it, but he was still able to get his weapon back intact. Trying to solve the issue in a logical manner made me hesitate. I would have warned you that he was coming at you otherwise. Sorry, Danny."
She shrugged, more of a conceptual thing than an actual movement of body parts.
"I had lost control of Rail by that point anyway. As soon as his ability triggered, he went into a blind rage and charged. I was just along for the ride."
We spent a little time whilst thinking. I casually fixed a wall that had cracks along it before Danny spoke again.
"Well, the Warhammer was bound to him, correct?"
"Yes, I made that a built-in function."
"Oh, you think that it being bound to Tom and making it circulate his essence imparted a portion of his aura onto it, therefore blocking my influence from breaking down its pattern?"
"That makes sense." "Dang it. So, if I want it back, I need to get to it as soon as he dies and before someone else activates it." Didn't seem to be a problem when getting Dale's weapon back.
I hadn't even thought that this would be a possibility. I had never even considered the effect that binding an inscribed item may have.
"Yeah, that is what I was going to say."
Danny coughed. She looked over at Snowball, who was sound asleep.
"Well, there goes practice."
"You could help me decide what to do. You may have been right a few days ago. I'm thinking that the third floor may be just a little too... what is the word? Overpowered? There was a group of 15 people that I was unprepared for, and together we killed off 2/3 of them, including a C-ranked guard."
I paused to see her reaction.
"Well, what did you have in mind then?"
Danny prodded me, obviously trying to get me to the point.
"We just found out that aluminum is rarer than gold. Why not change the way we do things a bit? We have gold right next to iron on the first level, and there are some miners up there that have been getting richer than people coming in to fight. That must be skewing the economy a bit. Let's put in a second mining area and move the current third floor down to create a fourth floor. Then the third floor will be a mining area with monsters."
"Interesting. That way there will be a higher chance of growth for you. Currently only about 1/3 of the groups that enter the dungeon continue all the way to Rail. Usually those are the people that are sure that they can fight Rail and win, or at least survive."
Danny pondered for a moment.
"If only 1/3 of the groups can make it down to the third floor, that means they will need to pull double duty, guarding and escorting, as well as fighting. Then they are stuck until the miners are done, and likely need to help haul ore outside."
I watched her in awe.
"Wow. You came up with that on the fly?
I've been thinking about this all day and night, and you still hit a few points I hadn't considered."
"I am very intelligent,"
Danny noted breezily.
"And humble as well," I replied dryly.
I am afraid that virtue does not exist among my many talents.
Danny laughed at the strangled noise I made in response.
At least you know your limits, I muttered.
The question for me becomes, what mobs do we put on that floor? Also, should it be a fairly open area, or should it be tunnels? And after it is going, do... Danny decided to cut off my thoughts at this point.
Why not worry about that after the floor is made? I know you have been extending downward with your influence, so let's take a week and lower the third floor far enough that you can grow that new mining floor quickly.
She paused, gathering her arguments.
That way you can save on essence by not using it in a big burst, and people may not notice for a while that there even is a new floor. No one has come to this one after that huge party got destroyed.
Sounds like a plan to me. Then I can decide how to make the layout. Oh, what if we...
Danny listened to me chatter for a few minutes about how I wanted to make the floor plan, oohing and aahing in all the right places. She tends to be a really good audience. We had just decided on the ratio of gold to aluminum when I tensed up and focused on a point high above.
What is the matter?
Danny was seriously concerned. After all, I almost never got this concerned. I'm basically a laid-back people-eater.
Three elves just entered. They are moving really fast. We are talking. I'm only tracking them by the disruption in airflow. Already at the first boss room. Passed. They haven't killed anything yet, which worries me. The bashers haven't had time to react to anything, I told her tensely.
Do you want to drop the panic doors?
Danny was trying to keep a brave face, but when I was nervous, Danny always became even more so. The panic doors were her idea. After the distortion cat incident, she told me that I needed to put more direct defenses into high-traffic areas. The panic doors allowed me to drop 5-ton cursed earth granite doors, which should be sufficient to at least slow overly powerful people.
I
hesitated. The doors took a huge amount of effort to reset, even for me.
They haven't done anything overtly hostile. I don't think I should just yet.
Danny nodded, accepting my answer. Sometimes I think she trusts me more than I deserve.
Where are they now?
Almost a rail. Wow. Watching their progress is ridiculous. They didn't even bend a blade of grass in the garden room. Oh.
What?
They bypassed rail. He was still mid-air when they started down the stairs.
I strategically began moving the assimilators around the third floor.
Ugh, they move so slowly.
Luckily, the third floor was not as straightforward as the others. The fast-moving elves paused and began moving through the labyrinth, seemingly frustrated every time they hit a dead end. Still, they were making good time through my tricks and traps, easily avoiding the attacks made by my mobs. They reached the final approach to the boss room and began moving down the straight corridor. My assimilator raised two of its stingers to chest level on a human, and the air vibrated a bit as the essence I was directing into my mob passed through. The elves never paused, actually increasing their speed forward. I had my assimilator release as much essence as it could channel. A huge burst of fire pushed through a focusing lens of celestial corruption. The fire that poured outward was white, tinged with gold, hot enough that a shockwave formed in front of it from air being burned and displaced. The rock walls in the fairly narrow hallway glowed cherry red as the wave of fire moved past, some of it cracking or shattering from the huge temperature differential. Any shards of rock that fell off stuck to whatever they landed on, fused together. This, at least, got the elves' attention. Their eyes widened for a moment, then narrowed with intense focus. The first of them stepped forward, making a motion that displaced air but had no other noticeable effect. The second swept forward with her hands, forcing dirt and dust into a thick wall of particles in front of them. The third halted entirely, making motions that caused a band of infernal essence forward, wrapping around the particle wall just before the wave of fire reached it. I was watching the interplay of essence as closely as possible to see what they had done. It was quite ingenious, really. The infernal essence counteracted the celestial in the fire, and though the fire was still intense, it no longer burned like a bar of magnesium.
The particle wall absorbed the force of the blast, and apparently the first of them had done something to the air that reduced the potency of the flame. The fire raged against their efforts for a moment, but when it subsided, a pane of clear glass stood in the hallway, allowing them to view the fiery landscape just beyond. The first one punched the glass, shattering it and allowing a blast of heat to escape. The influx of oxygen made the hallway glow brighter for a few moments.
Oh, that is what the first person did. The air must have had the oxygen removed from it in a small space. That would greatly reduce the potency of fire. I wonder if I could do something similar. Oh, damn, the people moved again. They ran directly at the glowing area. Right when I thought they would get third-degree burns on their tender feet, they began walking 2 inches above the floor. My assimilator, completely wrung out, fell to the floor and cooked near instantly, cracking and spitting like bacon. Oops. Forgot to replenish its essence.
Nice work on the air boots, Minya. You do decent work for a human.
One of the elves offered a backhanded compliment.
Thanks. Sure would be a shame if they suddenly failed over this molten floor, wouldn't it?
A raspy, distinctly human voice answered. I had heard similar voices on adventurers that smoked heavily. The elf in question looked at the bubbling floor, suddenly nervous. He swallowed.
It would at that.
The final elf in the group spoke up.
Enough, you two. Minya has a reputation as the best dungeoneer in the business, and you,
she pointed at the condescending elf,
have a reputation as a bigot. Who do you think Brianna would listen to if it came down to a complaint?
Whatever. Where is the tree?
They had turned the final corner and were now facing a thick wall of steam.
I'd assume, Minya rasped, that it is beyond the sauna.
How helpful, the elf sneered at the human's back.
Stop it! This is a boss room. Be on your guard. Remember, non-lethal,
the mediator elf barked. Poor Snowball had no chance. As soon as he appeared from the fog, the earth under him turned to sand, and he sank under his own weight into the now rapidly solidifying stone.
Done. To the tree.
They walked away from Snowball, who was snarling more furiously than I have ever heard. Walking into the next room, they blinked as the air was instantly clear of fog and steam. I had separated the boss room and my room after I noticed that the silverwood tree was wilting in the high heat and humidity environment. Marching right up to the tree, they looked it over and tisked.
Ugh! Look at that. An enchantment. How droll. It is weakening in obviously high elf workmanship, the male elf muttered.
Minya appeared cautious.
How can you tell?
Because it is hastily and poorly done, but artistic.
The male chuckled, lost in his examination of the enchantment around the tree.
Ah, found it.
He reached forward and plucked with his fingers, and the pattern of the enchantment started glowing, bleeding essence into the air.
Now we can put a better series of protections into place,
the female elf informed Minya in response to her arched brow.
What? This area is important to us.
To me as well. We had an agreement, yes?
Minya folded her arms. The female blushed, while the male rolled his eyes.
Look, we can't just leave you in here by yourself, especially without the protections in place.
So you are both planning to ignore the agreement?
Minya began to glare, tensing her hands. The male gave a cocky half-grin.
Well, I am.
He had barely spoken the words when Minya was behind him, delivering a strike to the base of his neck. He choked a moment, then fell to the floor.
Not dead, sadly.
This close to taking a B-ranked amount of essence. What about you?
Minya breezily questioned, gazing casually at her fingernails. The female sighed and nodded.
I'll watch him in the other room.
She collected her fallen teammate and dragged him away. When the room was cleared of elves, Minya turned her attention back to the tree.
Dungeon! She called softly.
Is she talking to me or making a statement?
I asked Danny, who just glared at me.
Dungeon!
Dungeon!
Minya got much louder on the second word.
Answer me! I know I'm not crazy!
She cackled a little after that, which led me to disbelieve her a tiny bit.
I'm not talking to her, I muttered.